Blog Talk Radio.
Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
This is Jackie Wayans, the host of Don't Give Up, and I'm so glad to be with you this week because, once again, we have another show to inspire you and encourage you. You know, many times we see people where they are and we think to ourselves, gosh, this is my opportunity. I'd love to be there one day, but we don't understand the process. We don't understand how they get there, and each of us has to go through a process to get to our there. And in fact, the notion of a there is kind of a myth that we bring to ourselves. But, you know, we have a wonderful guest tonight. He is husband, father, business owner. And he did not start there, but because of his past, because of the journey that the Lord has led Tim Olson, he now is able to help other men become better husbands and fathers and be inspired because of his story. And it's my desire that by the end of this broadcast, you will be inspired too. He is also author and radio host himself of the Tim O Show. And that's his AKA nickname, Timo. And he's here to share with us tonight a bit about his book, Growing Up Nobody. So welcome to the show, Tim.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
No, it's a pleasure, definitely. It's always a pleasure when I get to have other radio hosts on the show because sometimes when you're behind the mic, people forget that you have a story and that you have something to share because you're so busy interviewing others and pulling out of other people. So I'm glad that you're taking the time to share with us.
Well, thank you. It's kind of what started me in doing my show is when I had people telling me about my story and it's inspirational. I thought, well, my story is, you know, a little unique, but it's just one of many stories out there. And I thought, hey, this is what I need to do. I need to have give people the ability to tell their stories. So we have just ordinary folks on to big name people, you know, telling their stories and how they got to where they are and obstacles they've overcome.
I love it. It's very, very similar to the design of Don't Give Up Radio. So we're definitely in one accord there. I want to get right into your story. Your book is called Growing Up Nobody. And, you know, many of us have felt that over the years, maybe at some point when we were growing up, but we never really articulated it or said it out loud. So tell us about your past and what made you identify as being a nobody as you were growing up.
Well, partly starting off in my home life, my parents, I would say we probably started out just like a normal family, just like everybody else. You know, they got married and started having kids And as time went on, things just started happening. And some of the earliest things that happened were outside of the home that made me not feel like I was anybody was I was bullied a lot in school, starting off in, like, kindergarten, first grade. I went to a Catholic school, and the nun that I had for a teacher in first grade actually bought me my own ball to play with out on the playground because none of the other kids would play with me. To me, it's just one of those signs that I look back to, you know, that, wow, I mean, how alone was I? And so never had really any friends in school. And if I did have any actions, usually they were negative. And then as time went on, my dad worked in radio and television, hence why I love doing that myself. And he lost his dream job. And at that point, our home life really changed. He lost a lot of how he felt about being a man, not being able to provide for his family like he used to, and things like that, it really sent him into a depression and started him on this road of mental illness that he had. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, that strained my parents' relationship, and our whole home life became very, very strained.
I want to slow the picture down a little bit. because that's so crucial and vivid, those years that are forming us when we're supposed to feel protected and loved and nurtured. And I definitely relate. I'm an only child, and I definitely relate to the being rejected by your peers, kind of, you know, not fitting in, and whether it's the clothes or how you look or how you talk, whatever it is that they connect to. And so having that aloneness and loneliness, and then to be able to come home and then sense that something's off there too, is really disturbing. So you talk about the depression, and you also mentioned paranoia. Can you give me a tangible example or an experience where you kind of could see that something was off?
You know, when in the younger years, it wasn't defined that he had these things, but they were really starting. But I can give you a very example of his paranoia and delusional thinking later on when my parents had divorced. He believed that they would get back together, and he believed the church bought our old house and were remodeling it so we could all end up back there someday. That was some of his delusional thinking. And then some of his paranoid thinking, a lot of it had to do really towards me a lot of times, because I must have been in on some of the stuff that happened. And so he would point towards me, my fault if I would have lived with him and not my mom, she would have never left him, because she wouldn't have felt safe enough to leave, I guess, if I didn't go with or something.
So, you know, once this spiral happened in his life of losing his dream of job and not really being able to anchor himself again, the marriage and the family started to fray, and so I guess separation occurred, and you and your siblings went with your mother?
Yeah, going up to that, that's when my dad and I had some of our worst relationship times. For some reason, his anger turned towards me a lot during those years. As I became 14, 15 years old, I'm not quite sure why. I started to finally get some friends. I joined the theater in school. I was actually starting to enjoy some of that stuff and have friends, and I don't know if that bothered him or what it was, but we would fight nightly about things in my face, yelling, screaming. I've never physically hit or anything like that, but just really top of the lungs, yelling and fighting with each other. And their relationship was just as bad. They divorced, which broke him. We have some writings in my book that he wrote himself. He had gone to, when my mom said, "I want to divorce you," he went and checked himself into a hospital, a psych ward, basically, stayed there for a while. And when he was released, that's the exact time my mom said, "We need to get out of the house." He thought he'd come home to a sign, "Welcome home, Daddy." And instead, we were loading boxes in a car, and it just helped destroy him.
So I want to talk about that a moment. So he did check himself, and he did realize there was something crucially wrong. And as you mentioned, you know, back then things weren't as clearly diagnosed as they are now. And even now, there's still a lot of struggle with that. Was he put on medications? Was he getting any counseling?
You know, at first, when he first checked in, I don't know that he was put on any medication. In later years, I was more involved with that, and he was on medication in later years for his depression and for his paranoia to help control some of those things. But at that time, I'm not sure. I just know that really destroyed him. He thought our home life was good, and I guess that kind of goes into some of his delusional thinking, and it was like out of the blue to him. It's like he didn't even see that it was coming at all. Some of his writing, you kind of wonder how he can write, "I thought our family life was good." In talking to him afterwards, I would always try to say, "Dad, you know, this happened. How can you even think this was good?" And he couldn't even give you an answer. To him, it just was. And so he was totally destroyed. It was so out of left field that he just couldn't even handle it, because it was the most outrageously odd thing that our family should even break up to him.
So now at the age of 17, somewhere in there, your mom, she gets remarried. She moves to California.
Yep, she did remarried, and I got the choice to stay here, and I moved back in with my dad, and that's when I really started dealing with his issues, and she remarried out in California.
So now why did you choose to go back to dad?
With 1 year left of high school, I just couldn't see myself moving to California and starting all over. Like I said, I finally was established with some really good friends, and I was felt accepted pretty much for the first time in my life with a lot of these friends that I had made and stuff. And I just thought that seemed like too big of a hill to climb to go out there. And trust me, going to California, I live in North Dakota. It would have been beautiful.
Yes, I get it. But that is, you know, the teenage mind, right? I'm finally accepted. I'm finally have friends. I'm embraced. And even though you know that, you know, going back home might present some of the same challenges that it had before. So what did that look like, you returning home to live with Dad?
It was very different in, one, we had lost our house, and that's when he thought it was being remodeled. He had moved into an apartment. That's all he could afford. And when I got there, I hadn't seen him in quite a long time, and I didn't even know where he moved to because he didn't want anything to do with me because I betrayed him going to live with my mom. When I got there, I noticed numbers on the calendar, and they were the dates since they were my parents had divorced. He counted every day and stuff. He made out of cardboard, he made a little headstone, the death of the Olsen family with the dates on there and stuff. I mean, he had all these things around that just were very odd to me and hard to deal with. And I dealt with it as best we could. And we had situations. He was nice to me for quite a while because he was glad I came back. But situations arose that just made it hard again. He got thrown in jail for not paying child support. And I bailed him out, and I used all my money to do it. And there was no reimbursement, and there wasn't even a thank you for what I had done during that time. And so our relationship still became strained. And, again, it just kind of got back to that point that it was where we would fight over, really, when you look back at it, a lot of dumb things, but there was just a lot of it had to do with his thinking, and it had to be a little bit of me being a rebellious teenager, too, you know.
So now, were there other siblings in the picture, or was it just the two of you?
I had my one sister. She's 3 years younger than me, and she went with my mom to California.
Okay, so you really were the main person there with your dad going through all of this. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about your caregiver role there and how it actually started to impact your life as a young adult. The song that I am about to play, you know, usually I play Christian inspirational songs. There are many people who listen to this song and they are convinced it is a gospel song. So I'm going with that tonight. You know, the movie Purple Rain, came out when I was in high school, and it, you know, the protagonist, the star of the movie, had a very difficult relationship with the father figure there, and you know, it was abusive for the mother, it was abusive for the character, and his outlet was through his music. But it's difficult when you're not yet old enough to stand on your own 2 feet, and yet you're in a place where you definitely desperately want to do so. So when we come back, we'll find out more about your choices and what you did after that.
Thank you.
Don't Give Up Radio Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
And we're back, and I hope you are able to meditate through that instrumental medley, because all of us have had tensions at some points with our parents, whether it be a short period of time or something as severe as our guest Tim Olson is sharing with us. And so, Tim, you know, we left you with being 17 and taking care of your dad, you being the minor, actually being the person who's the caregiver. How long were you in that role with him?
Until he died when I was 24. So many, many years I played that role. And if I could, I'd just like to back up to the Purple Rain thing that you mentioned earlier. That was very big to me, too. I was 16 when that movie came out. And it touched me because those scenes of the fighting in the house, although theirs was a violent one, it was very feeling of my home and what was going on in my house at the time. And so that song Purple Rain, when that came out, the first, because what happens is, yes, the main character has an outlet with his music, but his music gets worse as things in his life gets worse. And I kind of followed those same steps. And first lines are, I never meant to cause you any sorrow, because I did things to people I wasn't very proud of myself about either. And so that is why that hits me. But going back to the caretaker role, then, I did that for many years. And I'm before I was even done with high school, I did so poorly in high school. I barely passed. I had to take summer school to finish. I watched all my friends graduate. But the fighting got so bad that I moved out and got my own little apartment before I was even done with the summer school courses, because I couldn't take living with him anymore. But I still kept on visiting him and taking care of him. We were the only two people in the city. The rest of his family was at least an hour away, if not farther. And my mom's family was from Indiana. They're 12 hours away. There was nobody else here around here that helped us out. So at these points, he did get on medication. I tried to help him out as best I could.
You moved out. You're on your own. You're still being a caretaker, but with some distance. What kind of emotions did these 5 years bring you to? What sort of things started to manifest in your character and your behavioral tendencies?
You know, I always thought I was a pretty good guy, and I was go-getting. I had gone out and got myself a job. I was working hard. I was getting promoted, so I was, you know, starting to make a little more money and got above minimum wage or whatever, and so I thought I was on my way to doing good things, but I really was growing more and more bitter as the years went on to about the world, anybody in it practically, and just kind of getting angrier and angrier, because as the time goes on here and the more things that happen, each thing kind of adds and adds and adds to my bitterness and angerness. And so at this point, I'm really starting to grow in that area where I'm actually kind of becoming like my dad. Whatever his anger was towards me, I'm actually starting to reflect that. And I didn't think that about myself, but as time goes on, it gets a little worse and worse and worse.
Yeah, that's the reality of when you don't have a support system or a network or even counseling that you yourself are going through, and you're being a caregiver for someone else, whether you're an adult or a teen, those emotions are definitely going to erode you and take you in. And I think you were about to share with us that your mother actually ended up passing away in a couple of years. And that's an extra burden on you as well.
Yep, then, you know, there becomes another thing, which is part of my justification, too, when I maybe was, if I did get angry or mad at whoever or whatever the situation was, I felt a little justified because I didn't choose for my dad to have a mental illness. I didn't choose to be bullied. I didn't choose for our family to fall apart. I didn't choose for my mom to die. I felt like most things were put upon me and they weren't my fault and I had no control over. I was feeling pretty beat down, and I justified some of my behaviors because of it. But yeah, when she passed away, that put a lot more burden on me. My sister, my stepdad, plain out said, I don't want her. And she came back here and was living with me, and so I'm taking care of her and my dad now, trying to get her to finish high school and try to formulate her to get on her own, you know.
Yeah, it's a very difficult job for someone who's trying to find their own way to turn around and then help a younger person, a younger sibling, do the same thing. So there's a lot on your plate here. You're working, you're taking care of a lot of things, and by the age of 24, you said that your father passed away also.
3 years later. I totally believe this to be true. One of the hardest moments in my entire life was happened to go to his apartment. He didn't have a phone. I had to go face-to-face and tell him that my mom had died. It was very sudden. She was diabetic. Her heart, she had a blood clot that moved to her heart, and her heart collapsed, and there was nothing they could do. She was dead instantly. So I go, and I had to tell him face-to-face, and the thing is, I knew that he still believed that they would be back together, and that destroyed him completely.
Yeah.
From that point on, he really was never the same. And in my book, I have a picture of my dad and I sitting on a couch. It was the last picture I have of him and I taken together. And I think it was 5 years before he died. And he looks like he's late 60s. And just to look at that picture, how old he looks when he's my age, you know, just kills me. Because he aged really fast. His mental illness took him down. He didn't care about his health. He didn't care about even just his cleanliness or anything. He just walked around, shuffled his feet, smoked a cigarette, and that was how his life became. He just had no joy, no excitement out of anything.
Well, I want to come back to that because I think it's very telling in terms of what was lacking in your home. But you also went through a number of personal events and personal failures, including a marriage. I don't even know when you would have had the time to find a relationship and get married and to have something that was a supportive relationship. So can you share how that happened and what did that look like, you know, trying to formulate a marriage in the midst of the type of experience and background that you had?
It started shortly after high school. We actually had known each other for a long time, and we actually didn't like each other before, so it's kind of funny we even got together. But, when looking back, it really wasn't much of a marriage thing. We were two friends who liked hanging out, and it just worked out that way. We were, I suppose, somewhat supportive to each other and things like that, but we were just two good friends who really liked hanging out, had a good time, and kind of helped each other through things, and wasn't the super closest relationship when I look back at it. I didn't know what a good relationship was. I thought it was at the time. I thought it was everything at the time, but knowing what a good relationship looks like now, what communication is, what real trust is, you know it wasn't what it was supposed to be. So, yes, I failed at that because she fell prey to me just being an angry, bitter person too. And I got to a point now after my mom died that I was so, you were either for me or against me. And so the smallest things at times, and it could be the silliest things, that I just thought if you weren't thinking about me or I thought that was something kind of against me, I would just be mad at you. And so And she fell victim to a lot of that, and on top of it, us not having a good communication, real good relationship, there was no way that was ever going to last.
I get it. And the thing, the reoccurring theme that I'm hearing, the thing that I'm not hearing, is I'm not hearing that in your household from your mom, from your dad, or any of your encounters was this awareness of God and his power to help, to heal, to love, that there was none of that in your upbringing, right?
Not really. I did grow up in a Catholic home, supposedly, Catholic school till fifth grade. But I, when looking back, I don't remember a lot of the teachings. We were kind of the type of family who went to church because you're supposed to type of thing. So we didn't, as kids, we didn't like to go. and stuff. So I didn't really take much out of it. And the only other thing I remember is at times my questions seemed to go unanswered. And I'm not saying that it's the Catholic Church itself. That's just what I attended. Mm-hmm. So I don't want anybody to think I'm
from
the Catholic Church.
Anymore.
It's just that's even it's my own family's fault for not answering some of those questions maybe at that time, where maybe a good mentor would have taken me and said, this is what you could get out of this. And it is the one thing I wish I had when I look back. The one thing I wish I had all that time is I wish I would have had Christ in my life to help me through all that, because I know how much better it would have been.
Wow. That is a very powerful statement. And when we come back, we're going to hear how God is able to intervene. And even in the prayers that we don't know to pray, the prayers that are in our hearts, even when we're in the most pain, that his love is able to come in and secure you. So it's so powerful to know how much he loves us, even when we have no idea who he is. When we come back, we'll talk more.
Yeah, he loves us.
Don't Give Up Radio Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
Yes, indeed. We are talking with Tim Timmonen, who is also the host of his own radio show as well, The Timmo Show. And he's really sharing with us his life journey. And up until this point, Tim, you really didn't have an awareness of who God was and how he loved and the sacrifice that he made for you personally. But you did, after many years of struggling and toiling and falling and getting up, at the age of 40, you gave your life to the Lord. You got into a relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ. Talk to us about how that happened.
Sure. Yeah, that's exactly right. After all those things, I was even attending church because that's what you do, right? I was doing the same thing my parents did. I was taking my kids and sticking them in Sunday school and things like that. And I would just sit through a service and went listen to a word they were saying. We were sitting in church and we saw on the bulletin a course. And we never thought we'd take a course, but this one had free daycare and they had supper with it. And we thought, hey, this is like a free date night to us. So let's put the kids in the daycare and we'll meet some other people, you know, because we didn't have a lot of friends. And we thought, well, maybe we'll meet some new people. That was our objective. It was not for anything that the course was offering at all. It was just hopefully meet some new people. We took this course, and as we went through it, it was like the Holy Spirit talked to us every time. That's what we didn't know what was going on at first. Everything that they were saying started applying to us in the life that my wife and I had led. She came from an alcoholic family. And so we both have had kind of a little bit rougher childhoods and lives. And all these things were speaking to us. Well, we were sitting in a group one night, and I was sitting there, and they said something that could only apply to me. I have a medical condition, and they talked exactly about that very thing. And I stood up, and I'm like, you guys are crazy. You keep talking about things. And I said, no, you're specific. You just mentioned the exact same thing I have wrong with me. How is it these topics keep coming up? I thought it was just crazy. Well, then, and I say this all the time, this just gets me. I know so many people who want to go out and preach to that guy about Jesus because he doesn't know about Jesus. I want to tell him how great he is. But I'm telling you, this small, tiny little act that they did at this moment is all it took. They looked at me and said, do you want us to pray for you?
That's it.
That's all it took for me to start on my journey to becoming a believer and a follower of Christ.
Wow. You said a series of really profound things. The first thing is the whole routine and ritual of getting up on Sundays, getting dressed, frustrating yourself through traffic to go sit in a building and not listen to a word that's being said. You're just going through the ritual and the routine of it. And so the objective here is, as I say that, is not to not go, but to go with an open heart and to go with expectancy that you are going to hear something that will absolutely change your life. And it doesn't have to be in a formal setting, because here you are, you guys are just looking for a free date night. I love that. You're like, free food, the kids are taken care of. This is great. We'll get to meet people. Wonderful. And these people are so in tune with what the Lord is saying to them, that they're actually speaking about you to you, and you're getting all weirded out because you're like, how is this possible? And the most powerful thing they could have done is what they did, and just asked to pray for you. Can you share with us what it felt like, and what did it sound like in your ears to just have people pray for you, to pray over you?
To be honest, that first time, thinking back, I think, well, has anybody ever offered that to me before? And they might have, but they walked away. You know, hey, I'll say a prayer for you tonight, whatever type of thing. But these people said, well, let's do that. And they got up and they grabbed a chair and set it in the middle of the room and had me get over there. And now I am super uncomfortable. Everybody's focusing on me. The whole room, I think we must have been about a dozen people in this group, all came and laid hands on me. And I'm just like, first of all, I'm not a touchy person, so everybody's touching me. I don't know that I can tell you what they prayed about. I know they prayed about my medical condition and what else they might have said. I don't even know that I can tell you, because my entire time I was thinking, oh, God, I'll get this over. This is embarrassing. I can't believe all these people are touching me. And I was in that state of mind. But what happened mm-hmm. when I left there, it was just triggering. Something triggered that this was God working through these people. Something was there. I wasn't sure what it was. I didn't know how to put a words to it or anything like that. But it just started mm-hmm. the journey where I started checking, you know, something's going on here. And next thing I know, I'm like, I believe in this stuff. I'm becoming one of those Christian guys, you know. I couldn't even believe. I was like, I gotta go to church. I gotta find a Bible study to go to. And so I started going to Bible studies, and I thought, this isn't me. What am I doing going to Bible study? But it was a slow process. I don't have a date where I just got on my knees and said, I'm turning my life over. It was a slow process.
Right.
But I just went there, and yeah, it's amazing. And, you know, 8 years later, I stand here, and I'm doing this, and I'm proclaiming it on the radio and anywhere I can go, and I help create a men's ministry at our church. And it, you know, if you saw me 8 years ago, you'd say, well, that's not Tim. But it is, yes, because he changes you.
Wow.
And my life is so much better than it ever was because of it, and because of the big thing called forgiveness.
Yes, and I want to get into that. That's our very next topic. I want to find out real quickly, though, did your wife and children follow? You know, she was there with you for that experience. Did she feel or experience anything, and have they come to know the Lord as well?
Yes, she has too, and maybe I drug her along. I don't know, but she has too, and our children all too seem to be following the path. Our kids are 14 to 19 years old, and they all seem to be following the same path. And I think my middle guy was 15. We're at a thrift store, and he sees a picture of Jesus. He goes, I want to buy this. I want this for my room. And I thought, oh, my goodness, a 15-year-old who doesn't want a picture of a sports guy or a Pokemon or whatever on his wall. He wants this. That's
right.
Awesome, you know.
That is absolutely awesome, and a complete turnaround and difference from the way things were the first time around. And if you're listening tonight and you're wondering, you know, how can I tap into this? I always share Romans 10:9-10, that if you confess with your mouth that Jesus Christ is Lord and believe in your heart that God has raised him from the dead, that you will be saved. Will, as in a definite promise from God. And that's where you start. That's the beginning. And he will then be able to come in and bring people into your life and really help you to understand and hear him. But that's the beginning place of the relationship. And definitely find wonderful people who are willing to pray with and for you, as Tim was able to do. So now, Tim, your book, Growing Up Nobody, wow, powerful, powerful title. And what you spend a lot of time talking about in the book is the issue of forgiving people who have hurt you in your past and forgiving yourself. Now, I think both issues are very different, and they need to be discussed separately. So did one happen before the other? Like, did you forgive yourself first and then others, or vice versa?
I would say I probably was forgiving other people first. And I think I forgave other people first is easier, because I'm the only person, you know, I can control myself, and I know what my behaviors were, and I did those behaviors where the other ones were done to me. And when I was taking a look at forgiveness, the one way I started working on it was I started to look at the people's motives on how and why they did what they did to me. And I started putting them in categories, and I put them in my book. And one of them is an unintentional offender, and that's a category my dad would be. Because of his mental illness, his behaviors and the way he acted was not of his own doing. His mind didn't work right. It's a chemical imbalance. So he didn't necessarily purposely set out to do the things that he did to me. When I knew this about him, it started making the process of forgiving easier. An apology from him, he's passed on. I'm never going to hear that. But I can still forgive it, because it's going to free up my mind, and it's going to make me feel better. You know, I won't have that running around in my head. And in the process, that's what started letting up on the anger and the resentment issues too, because really that's all anger is. It's hurt. So you're letting go of that hurt. Doesn't mean it's not what it's done or anything, but it's allowed me to forgive, move on, and I understand him a little bit better too, I think, going through that process.
Forgiving is definitely it's something that can be helpful for the other person, but really it's for you. It's for the person who's carrying all the hurt, the bitterness, and the anger, so that you can finally, as you said, release that. Now, I found for myself, I just started forgiving other people first. And then when I started to understand that I needed to get to a place of forgiving myself, that was a greater challenge. It was much harder. What was that like for you?
That was harder because I knew my behaviors. I knew what I did to people. I felt, am I supposed to walk around every person I ever wronged and say I'm sorry to them before I can get forgiveness? And that's not true, although there probably are some circumstances. If I came across some people, I probably still should apologize to them for things that are done. But it was a little bit harder because then I had to put myself in those categories too. And I in some ways, I was an unintentional offender. I didn't know what a good relationship looked like. I didn't know what good friendships looked like. I didn't know how to handle myself as a man a lot of times. I didn't have those good role models. So in some ways, it sounds like I'm making excuses for my behavior, and maybe I am, but it helped me understand why I did what I did. I didn't do a lot of those things on purpose. I just didn't know better. And now that I know better, I can move forward. And really, when one of the best things about becoming a Christian, that's what made me look at forgiveness. When you start studying forgiveness and you see, for me, it is the picture of Jesus on a cross, beaten, bloodied, near death, and he asked God to forgive those who just did that to him. He's in the midst of it, right then and there. It's happening to him right then and there, and he asks to forgive them. That amazes me so much that I think, well, why can't I forgive myself? Why can't I forgive other people? And really, just I can't even get over the freeing part of your mind, what it does for you. And on top of it, 75 to 90% of all doctor visits are because I'm stress-related anyway. So that's all part of, you know, you're stressing yourself out when you can't move on, you can't move forward. You're going to be stuck in the past. You're never going to move forward if you don't get past your past.
Get past your past. I mean, yes, hypertension is one of the biggest issues that people with unforgiveness suffer with. I'm not saying that if you're hypertensive, you're unforgiving, but the correlation of people who are actually admit to being carrying around a lot of guilt and anger and frustration from their past shows that once they go through the process of forgiving, that those numbers actually start to come down. They were carrying toxicity inside of themselves. You know, your book sounds very engaging. Can you tell the people where they can find the book, where they can find more about you, your radio show?
Sure. My book is on my website, which is timolson.info, and it's on Amazon. You can go to my podcast. It's on the website, timoshow.com. It's all one word. Tim O is my first name and last initial, but I was called that in junior high by a teacher. My nickname, Tim O, has been my nickname since I was like 14 years old. So the Tim O Show, timoshow.com. You can go there. The two websites kind of intertwine, so you can go back and forth. Book is available there on Amazon. My email is there. If anybody ever just wants to chat, I'm willing to chat with anybody. You can get on the email and email me, and I'll talk to you. If you have any questions or maybe you have a similar story, and that's the thing I found out doing my podcast. There are similar stories out there. So often you feel like you're the only one that has gone through certain things. There's so many people with stories out there, not exactly like yours, but similar, or you've had similar feelings or experiences. And, man, it is amazing to meet up and talk to those people. So I'd love to talk to anybody who even just wants to make contact.
I'd like you to share with the audience before we go. Our time is actually gone already. But if there's something from where you are today to when you were growing up and you thought to yourself, I never would have imagined that I'd be here today, you know, what would you say to someone who's thinking to themselves, I can't even imagine getting to a better place than where I am right now?
Boy, this is a hard one because I feel like I'm bragging, but my wife and I just celebrated our 20th anniversary. Both of us now have been married about 3 years longer than our parents ever were. So her parents divorced at about 17 years, just like my parents did. So we've made it longer than our parents. And both of us growing up would have never imagined we're not rich at all, but we do okay. We run our own business and we've done okay. Our kids have no idea how we grew up, how poor we grew up or anything. That's amazing to us. We had to go on a cruise this year for our 20th anniversary. It's one of those things that we could never, ever have imagined doing. It was so beyond belief. We live in North Dakota. I'd never even seen a cruise ship. I mean, so... It was amazing to go on the beach in the Bahamas, and we just sat there and said, is this really us? We can't believe we are here. And so that's one thing to us that was amazing. It just shows that you can move forward. I mean, I really would never believe that could be something we would get to experience in our lifetime. That's just not us. That's not where we came from. And so it just tells me you can get to those type of success. Now that's a kind of a monetary success. For me, absolute biggest success is not passing on the dysfunction that my family had to my children. My kids don't know what alcoholism looks like from my wife's side. My kids don't know what it's like to grow up in a house. We were latchkey kids. Nobody was ever home. My wife is, because of our business, has been able to be home every single day our kids come home from school. They don't know what that's like. They don't know what it's like to stand in front of the stove trying to keep warm because we ran out of fuel oil and we can't heat the house in the North Dakota winter, you know. They don't know those things. They don't know the yelling and screaming between their parents and the fighting and dad being locked out of the house and all this drama that's going on. They don't know that. And that, to me, is my biggest success.
I agree with you. That sounds absolutely awesome. And I believe the person listening who that has resonated with is feeling the joy. That's what's coming off of what you just said. I could actually see the two of you on the beach just going, wow, you know, look what God has done. And in John 10:10, Jesus says, listen, I come to give you life and to give it to you more abundantly. And of course, we were already living, so he's not talking about that. He's talking about feeling alive, being alive in him and the type of joy that he can give you. And what's really powerful about that verse is he says now as well as in eternity. So, you know, most of us are just, it's beautiful to imagine what it would be like when we finally get to see the Lord face to face. And that's an awesome moment that we can look forward to. But to know that that promise was also for here and now, we can actually begin to see him move so powerfully in our lives where we're like, Lord, I never even imagined that my life could look like this. Tim, thank you so much for sharing with us.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, right here on, if you're listening on Blog Talk Radio, the information is definitely on my page, his radio show and his website. You can just click the link and stay connected. I intend to do that. And also, for those of you who are listening, I want you to continue to be your very own best hero, because the greatest hero of all said that you were worth it when he gave his life for you on the cross. Until next week, God bless. Only a man. Can you only imagine? When we get to heaven, when you're standing there, can you only imagine?
Can you imagine just standing before the king? Oh, I can only imagine what it would be like when I walk by your side. I can only imagine. Face is before me. I can only imagine.